Welcome to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. Each week, you'll learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness and explore the deeper knowledge within. Welcome home. Now here's your host, Dr. Kelly Neff.
Hello, everyone. I am Dr. Kelly Neff, and you are listening to Lucid Planet Radio on Transformation Talk Radio, CRN Digital Talk, and WBLQ 1230 AM Rhode Island, Connecticut, and New York. Stay with us for the next hour and let us help you experience some really fun inspiration, creativity, and knowledge, because every week on Lucid Planet Radio, we have some of the most gifted scientists, healers, speakers, and authors helping you to become the greatest version of yourself. You can find out more at thelucidplanet.com. Stream all of our podcasts for free on lucidplanetradio.com, as well as iTunes, TuneIn Radio, and SoundCloud. Just search for Lucid Planet Radio. And you can also connect with me on social media, Facebook, Twitter, The Lucid Planet with Dr. Kelly. And now I'm even on Instagram. If you want a glimpse into my weird and wonderful adventures, Instagram, The Lucid Planet. I'm also so pleased to announce we are streaming now on CRN Digital Talk Radio, bringing us to over 11 million homes in the US and over 100 countries. You can find out on the website, thelucidplanet.com, how to become an advertising partner, how to listen live, and also how to nominate people to come on the show. I also just want to apologize for my incredibly hoarse voice today. It's sounding a little better, but I was in Las Vegas this last weekend, and the exposure to all the people and the craziness and all the cigarette smoke in the hotels, I had no voice at all. So I have been drinking green juices inspired by last week's show with Dr. Ronnie. Really bitter green juices like dandelion greens and watercress, but it's working. So anyway, I hope you're having a wonderful, healthy day. And, you know, if you're curious about sugar and summer detox, check out last week's show with Dr. Ronnie. Now, for today's show, we're going to go on a little adventure, and this is a different show from the usual, something I'm really excited about. We are going to travel back to 500 AD to explore the myth, the legend, and the reality of the lost tomb of King Arthur. Now, I'm a huge history fan, and I definitely read The Mists of Avalon when I was younger, and I've always been fascinated by paganism, British traditions, the Druids, the ancient Romans, Knights of the Round Table, and King Arthur. And what really amazes me is that the story has lasted the test of time. It's 1,500 years ago this has purported to happen, and I'm just so curious, you know, this has become really integrated in our collective unconscious of like the hero's journey. And so what is it about the story of Arthur that captures humans? And really, is it more than just a myth? I am really excited today to welcome historian and author Graham Phillips to the show, who's joining us all the way from the UK. And we're going to talk about whether the lost tomb of King Arthur has actually been found. In other words, was Arthur a real person? Can we find him? And Graham Phillips is a British nonfiction author, and he has investigated all kinds of historical mysteries since the 1800s. Enigmas like, you know, obviously King Arthur, as well as Robin Hood, the death of Alexander the Great. He's researched various biblical conundrums, such as the Holy Grail and the Ark of the Covenant. He has written 15 published books. He's appeared on many broadcast documentaries over the years. And he lives in England, and he works full time as what he would describe to be a historical detective. And he has also been described as a modern day adventurer and a real life Indiana Jones. Oh, that's so exciting. So on that note, let's please welcome Graham Phillips to the show. Hi, Graham.
Hello, Kelly. Thank you very much for having me on.
It's wonderful to have you on, and you sound great. I know you're coming from England and it's late there, so I appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Yeah, it's almost the middle of the night, and it's also winter here. No, that's a joke. But it isn't very warm.
I used to live in the UK, and yes, there would be like when the sun comes out, every single person's out in that pub garden because it's such a rare event, even in the summer, unfortunately.
We've had 3 days of it. That's it. 3 days of sun.
Oh man, I'm not. I'm not sad to live in Colorado, which has the most days of sun per year of anywhere in America, at least I believe, aside from maybe Hawaii. But anyway, I'm very excited to have you on to talk about King Arthur. Now, a lot of us have seen the movies, we've read books, we've seen plays, but for those of us maybe who haven't. Would you be able, Graham, to kind of summarize for us what the legend is of King Arthur?
Yeah, the legend, which pretty much started to be written down in the mid-1100s, is that King Arthur was an ancient monarch who united Britain into one country to fight invaders who were the Anglo-Saxons who came from Germany, landed by ship and started to overtake the country. The native Britons were Celts. Arthur is said to have united them to fight off the invaders around the year 500 AD. So that was over 600 years before the story began to be written down in the modern form. In this story, Arthur proves himself king by drawing a sword from a stone. Mm-hmm. And after this, he becomes king at quite a young age. Then he is guided by an elderly wizard by the name of Merlin, who advises him to build this magnificent city, the greatest city in all of England, called Camelot, where he rules with his knights of the round table. They're all supposed to have sat around a round table so that none of them could have precedence by sitting at the top. Mm. And these knights, they go on many adventures, including, for example, the search for the Holy Grail, which was said to be a magnificent enchanted chalice that if you drank from it could cure all ills. When Arthur becomes sick, they go searching for that and eventually find it. When Arthur grows up, he eventually comes into conflict with his nephew, Mordred, who tries to overthrow him in a revolution. And during a battle between Arthur and Mordred, the two kill each other. Well, Arthur falls mortally wounded. Mordred is killed outright. And as Arthur lies dying on the field of battle, one of his knights, he tells him to take his magical sword Excalibur, which makes him almost invincible, well, certainly until that point, and to throw it into a nearby lake. And when he does so, the arm of a mysterious nymph called the Lady of the Lake grabs the weapon and takes it down into the water. And then when the knight returns, he sees Arthur being sailed across this lake to an island on the middle called Avalon, where he's laid to rest.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, I have so many questions. What a story, though, right? I mean, of course, we love this story. It's got everything in it. It's a real underdog story, and it's got mystery and intrigue and magic and love, betrayal, all things that make a great story. One thing I wanted to say, which was I read in your book, The Lost Tomb of King Arthur, really, which is out now in the U.S., came out a couple months ago. Correct?
Correct.
Correct. I've read you offer a conjecture that, you know, one thing that's glaring to me is why did it take 600 years to write the story down? Now, could it be, and you mentioned the kind of the paper shortage, or that the paper that they had on mainland Britain would disintegrate, and so they weren't able to really record anything?
That's true. The period between when the Romans left Britain, because once the Romans occupied this country, until the 400s, when the Roman Empire collapsed and they left, from then until the Middle Ages, which start about the year 1100, there's a period of 600 years called the Dark Ages. And the reason it's called that is because law and order collapsed, the country broke up into separate kingdoms, and there was really no civilization for much of this period, like there had been in Roman times and there would be later. And the one thing that people forget is that it's not just a case. One of the things is that very few records survive from this period. So we don't really know a lot about what happened. But no. The legends that appeared, the reason why they weren't actually written down or any records is because they didn't have paper. It takes a lot to make paper. The Romans had, well, we may as well call them factories for making it. And these didn't exist during the Dark Ages. So firstly, there was very little to write on. People could write on parchment, which is skin of an animal. And also, of course, there was no schools, and so few people could write at all. So it was left to a few monks in monasteries who made their own paper to record things.
Mm-hmm. And your book, we'll talk more about this after the break, but your book discusses how there, I mean, the amount of research that you did to find whether Arthur was an actual historical figure, taking you all over the place. And you cite a lot of writings from the 1100s. I remember reading about there's a whole Welsh annals of history that they kind of summarize the 500-year period. And that was written in like 900 or something. And this just kind of blows my mind to think that what the story would sound like if the story was real. It must have been totally translated into some, epic game of telephone. on that note, we're going to take a quick break. And when I come back, Graham Phillips is going to tell us whether or not there is any evidence that King Arthur was an actual real person, that Camelot was real, was Excalibur real, and if real, can we find it? So stick with us, and we will be right back after this short break.
In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told.
What if your body and mind were the compasses to the secrets, mysteries, and magic of life? Glenna Rice, co-host of The Questionable Parent, is inviting you to access all that is possible. Glenna is a 10-year certified veteran access consciousness facilitator who offers an amazing variety of life-changing classes and workshops. Work with Glenna from anywhere with teleclasses and workshops all over the globe. To learn more and see Glenna's current schedule of events, classes, and workshops, visit glennarice.com.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Tim Darter.
And I'm Steve Kramer.
Join us on Spirit Fire Radio. Discover how to add the mechanics of meditation to your day.
And watch yourself connect in a whole new way. Find the amazing moments in life's routines that often pass us by. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio.
Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. for your weekly guide to practical mindfulness. And to learn more, visit www.spiritfireradio.com.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
Better hurry because, oh, hi, sorry. I'm Dr. Kelly, and you are listening to Lucid Planet Radio on Transformation Talk Radio. I am here with Graham Phillips, historian and author, who is talking with us about really his research and discovery of potentially the lost tomb of King Arthur. I was telling Graham over the break, I have been getting blown up by listeners saying that he has the best accent ever. And I kind of agree. I mean, his voice is amazing and his work is amazing. So, Graham, I want to make sure that everybody knows how to contact you to find out more about all of your amazing research and your book.
Well, my website is grahamphillips.net. That's GRAHAMPHILLIPS. You don't say double L, you say LL in America, don't you?
Yes.
.net. But if you just type Graham Phillips, author, into Google, you'll find me. And on the first page of my website, there's a little picture of each of my books, and you just click on that and it'll give you a good few pages all about what each book's about with lots of pictures and so forth. That's all you have to do.
Perfect. And I have to say, one of the things, Graham, that is so amazing and impressive about all of what you've accomplished and what you're doing is that for those of our listeners out here, Graham is not an academic. He's not part of the establishment. He is not part of a historical society. He has literally been out there kind of like I said earlier, kind of Indiana Jonesing it, doing this research on his own and finding out things that nobody else has found out. Graham, what motivated you to get into this?
Well, I wondered why the King Arthur story, something which has become so big, ever got going in the first place. And I thought, could there be some truth behind the medieval tales? And incredibly, although very few documents survive from the Dark Ages, there are a few. And one of these was written in 830 by a monk called Nennius in England. And he wrote that he wrote a history of Britain. And in this, he includes King Arthur. And he says that he was a king that united the Britons around 500 AD.
Wow.
But he doesn't include all sorts of fanciful tales like damsels in distress and fighting dragons and all this sort of thing. He simply portrays Arthur as an historical figure. And he records his battles. So I thought, wow, it seems that Arthur is recorded in history over 300 years before he becomes this character of fantasy.
And so how did that kind of lead you on this search? I mean, this has been years in the making, hasn't it?
Yes. He gives us a very precise time when Arthur came to the throne. He says it was in 493. You can work that out by other events he does mention that are taking place in Rome.
Sure.
And that in 500 AD, he fought a battle at a place called Badon. Now, if we go to records that are kept from the period that Arthur is said to have lived, we find there's another monk called Gildas, and he writes, and his work still survives, he writes that the Battle of Badon was a real battle in which the Britons, led by a great leader, managed to defeat the enemy. But he doesn't name this leader, but it does show that the Battle of Badon, of which the later Nennius tells that Arthur beat the Anglo-Saxons, was a real battle recorded by somebody who was actually alive at the time.
So this is potentially more than just a story.
Absolutely.
Actually happened.
Yeah, what's really fascinating is that what I decided to do was to say, okay, if there's a chance that Arthur was a real figure, then where did he come from? Now, some people might say, well, he came from Camelot. So look at a place called Camelot. There isn't any such place called Camelot in Britain. And probably there never was, because the name Camelot was invented by a 12th century poet to rhyme with the word Lancelot. There are earlier references to Arthur ruling from this magnificent city, the capital of Britain. So what was the capital of Britain in 500 AD? It wasn't London, because that had been overrun by the Anglo-Saxons. But archaeology has now discovered that the biggest and most powerful city in the country at the time was a place called Viriconium, right in the center of London, right in the center of England. And it was an old Roman city. And the archaeology has shown that it was completely refortified and still being occupied at the time Arthur is said to have lived. And they believe, from what they have discovered in the excavations, that it was the most prosperous city in Britain at the time Arthur is said to have lived. You can still actually go around the ruins of it now. It's in the middle of fields and it's open to the public. You can see the walls and the foundations, and there's a little museum on the site with the discoveries made there on show. And what was most incredible is right in the middle of this city in 500 AD, archaeologists determined that somebody had built a massive great mansion, Roman style mansion. And whoever lived there, they believe, must have been the most powerful warlord in Britain at the time. Mm-hmm. So I'd got a place that could have been an historical Camelot.
Mm-hmm. And so what do? You just figure out who the ruler was and that's him? Or is it more complicated than that?
That seems to be it. That's the second point. Now, so actually finding out who ruled there wasn't that difficult. Records survive. Like the one you mentioned earlier, like these Welsh, British annals that were written in 900, summarizing history of the Dark Ages. And it tells us that the man who ruled there was somebody, and in 500 AD, called Owen Thangwyn. Owen. So he wasn't called Arthur at all. So when I found that out, I thought, oh, no, well, maybe I found a man that did what Arthur did, but he wasn't called Arthur.
Sure.
But then when I read the monk Nennius again through his work, and remember, he wrote within living memory of these events of the time Arthur was alive. Yeah. He refers to this man, Owen, the man who ruled Viriconium, under a title. He calls him Ursus, and that's Latin, as he wrote in Latin. That in English is a bear, like the animal. And it was common practice for the Celtic people of Britain at the time to adopt the names of animals as an honorary title in some way typifying their prowess. For example, the fox, if you were cunning. This man, Owen, was called the bear. And this is the fascinating part. When you translate bear into Brythonic, which was the language spoken in Britain in 500 AD, the word for a bear is Arth, A-R-T-H. And Arthur means the bear. The actually goes after the word rather than in front of it, sort of like the same as you get in Japanese.
Yeah.
So the man who ruled from Viriconium at the very time, which was the most powerful city in the country, at the very time that Arthur is said to have ruled the most powerful city in the country, was called Owen, and his title was Arthur. So case closed. He existed. I found out where he was and where he came from.
And what has been the reaction of the kind of historical archaeological community? In other words, why did it take this long to make this connection?
The archaeological community have been really quite favorable to me. They've actually helped me very much, giving me access to the information that they've discovered, helped to, as I'll talk about in a little while, even do a geophysics scan of certain places that became involved in the search. In other words, they were able to use expensive ground penetrating radar to see what lies below the ground without the need to dig. So archaeologists have been very helpful. Historians, on the other hand, have tended to say, well, you can't have found King Arthur. Why? Well, he didn't exist. Now, what they mean by this is the Arthur who is supposed to have fought dragons, rescued damsels in distress and all the rest of it may not have existed. And I'm not saying that man did. Mm-hmm. Whatever he really did or didn't, I don't know. But there was definitely an historical figure who did the main things Arthur is said to have done, upon whom the legend was based. And they don't really like to get their head around that, because if historians start to talk about Arthur, it's almost sacrilegious for them to do so. It's too controversial, so they stay away from it. So they don't. But no one's proved me wrong.
Nope.
No one's even proved any of it wrong.
No, and that's the thing. It's funny, it's good old academia in so many ways. It can be so progressive, but it can also be so kind of crony ivory tower, because if you rock the boat, then you change the whole story of everything that we've already learned. That whole paradigm then needs to shift. And that's very threatening. You know, anytime there's a new idea that's a threat to the status quo, the establishment is going to kind of fight you on it. We have to take a break, but I really want to know, because what I really want to know when we come back is about the tomb, the resting place. And I think from there, we'll kind of understand, you know, because if anyone could prove you wrong, if they could just find the tomb somewhere else, or, you know, it didn't exist. But if it exists, that adds a whole nother layer to the story. Wouldn't you agree, Graham?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, find him somewhere else and I'm in trouble.
Yeah. Right. But still, it'd be cool. Anyway, on that note, you're listening to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly. And when we come back, Graham Phillips and I will continue to explore the mystery, the legend, and the reality surrounding King Arthur and the Lost Tomb. And we're also going to talk about Excalibur and Avalon. So stick with us and we will be right back.
Get ready to rid yourself of all that is weighing you down and holding you back from living the life you want for yourself. Coming Clean, The Art of Transparency with Catherine Moss is a hit show for women in recovery who are ready to live life on purpose. Tune in and let Catherine help you live your truth one day at a time. Live each Tuesday, 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Searching? Are you searching? Looking for a sign? A message you need to hear? From the great unknown? From the most mysterious place that is the most familiar to your soul and the depths of who you are? The universe put someone here to talk to. Someone God gave a blessing to that you may find insight with. TheAngelLady.net. 1-800-323-1790.
Get into it for 2016. Do you want more prosperity, clarity, energy, and balance in your life? Join Lynn Brown now for one of her amazing workshops, each focusing on a key part of living your best life. For more information and to register for one of these amazing workshops, visit LynnBrownEvent.com. That's LynnBrownEvent.com. And get into it this 2016 with Lynn Brown.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
Welcome back to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and I am here with Graham Phillips talking about the mystery, the legend, and possibly the reality of the lost tomb of King Arthur. And Graham, tell us about the burial place of King Arthur. Why hasn't it been found, and where do you think it is?
The figure who I believe was the historical Arthur, Owen, whose real whose title was The Bear, Earl Arthur, he is recorded. Now, remember, no one before I has put together the references to Owain Llanfihangel as being the king of from Viriconium and the fact that he is called the Bear Arthur. So the fact that people have known exactly where Owain is buried for what at least the records are freely available, no one bothered to go and really take much notice of that because nobody thought he was a really important figure, a known figure like King Arthur. Now, so the records survive as to where Owain was buried. And at Oxford University in the Bodleian Library, there is a manuscript that tells us he's buried at a place called the Churches of Bassa. Now, I thought it's got to be somewhere near Viriconium. I looked on a map and found that there is a place today, a village called Bass Church. Bass Church, Churches of Bassa, they're so similar that one has got to be the same as the other. And it's only about 8 miles north of Viriconium. So this seems to have been the place where Owain was buried, the historical Arthur. Now, when you go to Bass Church, just outside the village, there is a hill, a small hill, which was once an island in the middle of a great big lake. Now, over the years, the lake's dried up and only some of the lake survives. So you've got this hill on a flat plain with some lakes around it.
Sure.
But back in 500 AD, a limited amount of archaeology has shown that this place was occupied and used as some sort of ceremonial site. So it could be a burial site. Owain is said to have been buried in the middle of an area called Travail's Acre. So it's an acre of land. Well, there's an acre area at the bottom of this hill. And when you go there, it's surrounded by an embankment. So there is certainly that was built many years ago. So it's certainly used for something. That seems to be where Owain was buried. But was he really there? I managed to get the archaeologists of the area to come along and use what's known as geophysics equipment. That's ground penetrating radar that can look under the ground and tell what's down there without the need to dig. And also other forms of equipment that can see if there's metal objects under the earth and so on. And they found that right in the middle of this field is a circular ditch, or would have been a circular ditch that was then filled in. They can tell by the different type of soil. A circular ditch, 6 feet wide and 6 feet deep. Now, that is exactly the kind of burials dating from around 1500 years ago, circular burials. And right in the middle of this ditch, they found a large metal. The reading showed there was a large metal object, probably the central boss, the central part of a shield. Now, it is also known from other archaeological sites that high status or warrior class individuals were buried lying on their side with their shield on their arm. So what's right in the middle of this place where Owain is said to be buried is a burial consistent with that of the period that he lived. So it's almost certainly his grave. And as I've already argued, there's no doubt that Owain was known as Arthur. And he ruled from the same place that Arthur is said to have ruled, in as much as he ruled from the capital of Britain at the time. So this, at the place called Bass Church, this hillock, in the centre of England, is where I believe the historical Arthur is buried.
So is that the land of Avalon then, by the transitive property?
Well, the thing is, remember I said at the beginning that Arthur in the early stories, in the romantic stories, is buried on an island in the middle of a lake. Well, this man was buried on an island in the middle of a lake as it was back then. Yes, that could be the historical Avalon.
And then, of course, the next question is, where is Excalibur?
Now, this is a really fascinating story, because when I was convinced that Arthur was real, I thought what other parts of the story might be real. And obviously fighting dragons is probably a bit over the top. But what about this Excalibur idea? Where did this come from? Well, according to the legend, Excalibur is thrown to the Lady of the Lake. And that just sounded to me to be one of the less believable aspects of the tale. But incredibly, this proved to be possibly based on something that really happened, because the Roman writers who were in Britain tell us that the ancient Celts used to have a funeral practice when a leading warrior was being laid to rest. His sword was thrown into a lake, a sacred pool or lake, as an offering to a water goddess. Mm-hmm. So could this have been where the whole idea of Arthur's sword being thrown to the Lady of the Lake comes from when he's dying? It kind of gave them safe passage to the underworld, if you like. It was an offering. Now, what made me convinced that this was how the story originated is because this goddess, this lake goddess, was known as Viviana. And in the very earliest tales of King Arthur, the Lady of the Lake is called Vivian. Vivian, Viviana, one's got to be based on the other. So I think Excalibur, really, the Excalibur story is based on something that really happened. So if the tale of Arthur's sword being thrown into the lake that surrounds where he was buried on Avalon is true, then could there be something in one of the parts of the lake that still survive today? And I managed to organize, and all this was filmed for a National Geographic program, and they got hold of marine archaeologists who went up and down the lake with special equipment to scan the bottom. And it looked as though there was something in the middle of the lake, an iron object and also other metals that could have been precious metals like gold. Arthur's sword is said to have had a golden handle. And they were so convinced that there could be something down there that might be a sword that divers were brought in, underwater archaeologists, and they went down. But unfortunately, the waters were so dark and peat stained, and there was like 3 feet of mud at the bottom. Until they've actually got dredging equipment, it's impossible to tell what this is.
I see. And is that just super expensive or just logistically very challenging?
The problem is to get a dredger boat into a lake which hasn't got a river connected to it.
That's true.
You'd have to build it there. Or you'd have to get some really expensive trailer attached to a big truck. It's the logistics. It's the expense at the moment. And it might just turn out to be anything down there. There's not enough evidence to really get this going with people to pay a lot of money. But there is enough evidence to have an archaeological dig at the place where I think Arthur's buried. The problem is that they won't allow one there because the area, as it's known to be an ancient site, has a protection order slapped on it by the government. And there's an organisation called English Heritage that decides what dig's going to happen and what can't. And at the moment, even though the landowners were happy about a dig, even though the archaeologists were prepared to do it, even though the money was there to do a dig, the problem was that English Heritage said no, and we're still trying to fight that now.
Do you think it's again because of that same thing of what happens if, you know, they find it and it is him, or they find Excalibur, or they find the tomb, and then we'll have to change the story, or why? What do you think?
I think the reason is that they're frightened of the situation where somebody who is not a big academic name or any kind of academic name at all has managed to put all this stuff together and they haven't, with all due respect to them.
Sounds about right. Well, I love in your book, you talk about the reason why you've been able to do this, how you've synthesized many different fields of inquiry. And the technology is also there, that you've gone from the geological side, the archaeological side, the historical side, language. You've studied all these different things and combined them in a way that's very unique that nobody else has.
Yeah, that's it, really. I mean, the historians have got part of the story. Folklorists have got another part. Literary scholars have got another part, and so have archaeologists. But these disciplines never talk to each other. They can't stand each other. So what I've simply done is to bring them all together, like assembling a huge jigsaw puzzle, and manage to solve it that way. It's, and also, as you rightly point out, there's the technology now is available. It wasn't until relatively recent that you could do this sort of geophysics. And also, it's only recently that Viriconium has been properly excavated. Yeah. So I've got an advantage.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. But I mean, these things come together. And it's always this kind of divine situation where all of these elements come together at once to produce something really magical. That's what innovation is for me. So it makes a lot of sense. And I would just love to know what is in that burial site. Ah,
well, maybe he'll be dug up soon, because the actual date of the death of this guy, Owen Thangwyn, was exactly 1,500 years ago. This October.
Oh, wow. That's kind of exciting.
Maybe something will happen then.
I don't know. You just never know. Maybe his spirit will come back and it'll magically jump out of the ground. On that note, we're going to take our break. And when we come back on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, Graham Phillips and I are going to wrap up the show. And we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, the excavation, the potentiality for finding King Arthur and Excalibur. And I also want to bring up some of the other interesting characters of the story, like Morgan Le Fay and Merlin, if they were real too. So hang in there, and we'll be right back in a few minutes.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days, because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Are you and your family looking for one manageable lifestyle change that will positively impact your health? Look no further. That change begins inside your drinking glass. Learn how to put a lid on junk drinking by sipping from a recipe collection of colorful, fresh, tasty, wholesome fruit and vegetable blends. Get your copy now of Sip the Garden, fun, easy drinks for a healthier family by T. Carrie Mitchell. Visit lifestyle120.com for information on how to order.
Get ready to rid yourself of all that is weighing you down and holding you back from living the life you want for yourself. Coming Clean, The Art of Transparency with Catherine Moss is a hit show for women in recovery who are ready to live life on purpose. Tune in and let Catherine help you live your truth one day at a time. Live each Tuesday, 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Get into it for 2016. Do you want more prosperity, clarity, energy, and balance in your life? Join Lynn Brown now through March for one of her amazing workshops, each focusing on a key part of living your best life. For more information and to register for one of these amazing workshops, visit lynnbrownevent.com. That's lynnbrownevent.com. And get into it this 2016 with Lynn Brown.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good, and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
Welcome back to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly. And I am here with Graham Phillips talking about the discovery of potentially the lost tomb of King Arthur. Now, Graham, I have got the chills right now. And I want you to tell our listeners, we were just discussing during the break, if Arthur was a real person who you've identified as Owen or the Bear, then surely we can trace his lineage to modern day Britain right now, can't we?
Indeed we can, and I have done just that. What I became fascinated by was that Arthur's tomb is said to have on it, his gravestone, the words Arthur, the once and future king. Now, maybe there's such a gravestone underneath the earth if we ever get permission to dig, which would be one way of identifying if it was Arthur or not. But it may not be true. It may be just a legend. But the legend came about because Arthur is said to one day live again and come back and rule the country at the time when Britain is in great danger. Mm. Now, the thing is that in the earliest version of this story, it's not that he will live again, but his lineage will not sit upon the throne again, his descendants until that time. Now, I have traced the direct descendants of Owen, the Bear, Arthur, right the way down until modern times. From the Middle Ages, they became the Spencer family. And one of the Spencer family was Princess Diana, Lady Diana Spencer. And her son, William, is second in line to the throne after Prince Charles. So one day he will be king, and he will have been, when he becomes king, he will be the first king to rule Britain of the same line as Arthur, since Arthur. So in other words, that's the time when Arthur's line will sit on the throne again. And you know, the really fascinating thing is William's middle name is Arthur.
It's Arthur.
He was also born on Midsummer's Day, which is a Celtic festival.
Yes. Yep. Oh, wow. That's so amazing. So even though, you know, so much has happened, but it almost seems like these, you know, secret pagan legacy lineage is still afoot working, you know, possibly for the good of England. I've always thought he'd be a great king. I don't know. It's
He is. He's much more talkative than his grandmother.
Yeah. But, you know, I love that because who knows, right? We live in a kind of magical world. And but yeah, that just totally gave me the chills. And I wanted to talk just in the time we have left a little bit more about the more magical characters in the story, because that, you know, we can't help but want to see the magic in things. And, you know, maybe it was there and we've lost it. Or maybe we're finding it again. A lot of people are talking about this awakening, that people are waking up to their hidden psychic gifts and synchronicities in the universe and manifestation. And characters like Merlin and Morgan in the story, you know, Merlin, of course, we've all heard of Merlin. He's always portrayed as kind of this wizardy Gandalf-y character. But your book says that he had a different kind of role. Is that true?
He was half a Gandalf-y type of character. You've invented a new word for the English dictionary. He was half a Gandalf-y character, but he was also a warrior. The earliest references to Merlin in the story call him Ambrosius, and he only became Merlin once he became this wizard. And once again, the name Merlin is a title. It means the eagle in ancient the British language, and still a bird of prey called the eagle today. So Ambrosius and Merlin seem to be like one and the same. Now, this Ambrosius is said to have been a warrior who was fighting for the Britons before Arthur came along, but he was wounded, he grew older, so he had to retire and therefore advised Arthur. Now, did this man exist? Yes, he did. A man called Ambrosius, as a warrior in Britain, just before Arthur's time, is recorded in some of the few historical documents that survive from that period. So we know that he was real. We also know that at the same time as Arthur was living, there was also a man called Merlin. And he's recorded as being a bard. Now, what a bard was a poet who wrote poems about the leaders of various courts, kings, princes, noblemen. And they also were magicians in a sense, in as much as they were thought to be able to perform miraculous deeds. And the Romans referred to them as having amazing memories. They developed these astonishing memory techniques to remember long verses, for example, in their poetry. They also practiced something which sounds, according to what the Romans say, very similar to what we today would call hypnotism. Mm. And they were also skilled in using drugs, in other words, medicinal herbs, for curing sickness and for inducing hallucinations in people to send them on spirit quests, if you like, spirit visions. So like all these things was seemed to be, and also because Merlin was previously a warrior, Ambrosius, the role to advise the young Arthur on military matters fits perfectly. And also the role of the Gandalf-y type figure comes about because of his knowledge of medicinal herbs and his apparent ability to perform miracles through hypnotism and this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So he was real.
That is so cool. Very quickly in the time, couple minutes we have left, one thing I had to bring up, we've seen the Hollywood portrayals. There's a new movie coming out next year, Guy Ritchie's producing, with Charlie Hunnam as King Arthur, that's supposed to show King Arthur's darker side. But I have to ask, and you do a great job discussing it in your book, is there any legitimacy in the way that these films are produced by Hollywood, or is there a lot of stuff that's possibly wrong about the year 500 AD when we're talking about Arthur?
Well, first of all, the story of Arthur has him living in a huge Gothic castle. These didn't weren't built until the Middle Ages. In 500 AD, there'd have been Roman-type cities, and their defences would have been wooden stockades. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have fought with shining armour, but would have worn chainmail sort of armour. They wouldn't have had great big broadswords like the knights did in the Middle Ages, but shorter style stabbing Roman swords. So the historical Arthur would have been more like a Roman than a knight in shining armour. And very few of the films ever show Arthur in that way. They show him as his medieval counterpart. So I don't know what this new film's going to show him as.
I can't wait to see.
A leprechaun?
Yeah. Who knows? It'll be interesting. Apparently, it's going to be a serious vampire. Yeah, might as well put some werewolves and vampires and the whole shebang in there. You know, this is a story that we've all grown up with. Even my boyfriend says the cartoon of the Sword in the Stone is still like his favorite ever cartoon from when he was a kid. And, you know, I guess what's great is that the story has captured the imagination of so many, but actually the fact that it might be rooted in reality makes it that much better. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. It makes the whole thing. And certainly when you can go to one of these old Roman cities, Viriconium, and you look around and you think, this may have been where the characters that were behind the story of King Arthur and his knights, the real tough Celtic warriors that met mm-hmm. here and fought off a much larger force than themselves, you know, that this is where it all started. It's quite an amazing feeling.
It really is. Well, that's all we have time for today. Wow, Graham, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on.
It's been lovely to have you. And remember, to our listeners, you can find out all you need to know about Graham and all of his books at grahamphillips.net. And I will link this when I put the podcast up, so you'll just be able to click on it, just grahamphillips.net. I love doing this show. I hope that our listeners had such a wonderful time like I did. And you can join us every Wednesday, 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Mountain, 2 p.m. Pacific, and I don't know what time it is in the UK now, but that time in the UK, maybe 11 p.m. you can also, again, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as going to thelucidplanet.com and checking us out on iTunes and SoundCloud. Listen to all 53 episodes so far. Wow. Next week, I will have author Sherry Brown on the show, who is going to share with us the 7 commandments for happiness and prosperity. I think we could all use some of that. So stay tuned, light and love, and I will see you next week.
You've been listening to the hit show,
Lucid Planet Radio with renowned psychologist and author, Dr. Kelly Neff. Tune in each week as we illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. This hit show will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake up to the greatest version of yourself. Learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness as you explore the deeper knowledge, passion, and purpose within. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for upcoming show topics and to contact Dr. Kelly.